Hello, I'm Bruce Edwards, and welcome to this podcast produced by the International Monetary Fund. Today, a feature program about how changing weather patterns in Malawi left 40% of the population without food and the exceptional joint response that followed.
If you look at the issues of climate change, these are real. They're real. They're coming in real. And we need to see how we can reverse the situation. So working together, we can see how we can save the Mother Earth.
Extreme weather has hit Malawi's economy hard over the last 2 years. Severe flooding followed by a drought, the worst in its history, dramatically reduced maize production and placed 6.7 million people at risk of starvation. But a remarkable humanitarian effort helped stabilize maize prices and reduce the impact of the drought on the most vulnerable segment of the population. An increase by the IMF to the amount of resources it provides to Malawi, as well as sizable contributions from Malawi's development partners like the World Food Programme and the World Bank, enabled the country to address the worst humanitarian crisis in its history. A borehole amid a cluster of small mud brick houses provides these women enough water to run a household. But the fields that surround this village outside of Salima depend on rainwater for the crops. Agriculture is a lifeline for most people in Malawi. The sector accounts for more than 30% of the national income, and small-scale farming is what the vast majority relies on for food. But changing weather patterns are making it harder for subsistence farmers like Blessing Zimponda to sustain themselves.
Yes, I've seen the big change. Many things have changed in my house, even at my house. Changes are there.
But you still depend on the rain?
Yes, we depend on rain only.
Only rain?
Rain. Yeah. The problem is we have been taught for winter planting, but the problem is water is the problem.
Yes, the problem is water, not enough or too much. Since 2015, Malawi experienced devastating floods, followed by a severe drought, wiping out crops and leaving almost half the population without food. And with the government coffers as dry as the fields, Finance Minister Gudal Gondwe says they had no money to buy the maize needed to pull 6.7 million people back from the brink of starvation.
What went through your mind, a year ago when you realized that there was a large part of the population that were hungry and you didn't necessarily, the ministry didn't have necessarily have enough resources to purchase food?
Well, we thought we were going in for a crisis because, as you say, we didn't have enough resources to look after the people. And the first decision we made was that we should ask the president to declare an emergency and to ask the international community for their support, which fortunately for us was readily given.
And so how important is the international community generally in terms of the national budget?
Well, the national budget is one thing, but the crisis is another. As far as the crisis was concerned, we got a lot of almost the entirety of our requirements to feed the poor free of cost to themselves. The international community assembled that amount of money. Now, as concerning the budget itself, we have been used since independence in 1964 to rely to a large extent, about 10% of our budget on the average, from budgetary support of the donors. But that was withheld and withdrawn following the Kashget episode, which everybody is aware of now. And therefore, we have had to adjust, with the help of the IMF program, to make some deep fiscal adjustments so as to match the available resources with the needed budgetary expenditure.
As an IMF member country, Malawi is entitled to draw a certain amount of IMF financial resources based on its quota, which is determined by the size of its economy. But in times of crisis, a country may be allowed to draw beyond that amount under an arrangement called the Extended Credit Facility, or ECF.
I'm Oral Williams. I'm currently the mission chief for Malawi, where we have an extended credit facility arrangement with the authorities.
So what happened with the so-called Cashgate scandal, and what has been the impact on the country's economy?
Well, Cashgate involved the embezzlement of public funds by officials along with private sector companies. And over a period of 6 months, some $45 million was embezzled. This had a tremendous impact on the economy because then both donors and other stakeholders lost trust in the integrity of the budget. So donors suspended budget support. So the country suddenly faced with a shortage of funds. And so as a result, government could not pay a lot of its commitments. So it ran arrears. There was recourse to domestic financing, including financing from the central bank. So there was a lot of liquidity. The exchange rate depreciated. Inflation went up. Suppliers were not paid. They didn't pay the bank. So non-performing loans in the banking system went up. So it was very corrosive. Growth shrunk as a result of this Cashgate. So it had an enormous impact. It was a huge shock.
So when the food crisis hit and Malawi was faced with having to provide urgent humanitarian relief to almost half of its people, the government reached out to non-governmental organizations and international agencies with experience in dealing with crises of this scale. The man behind the plan was Ben Botolo, now Treasury Secretary, and the World Food Programme, or WFP, took the lead role in implementing it.
And so I understand you were personally involved in making a plan. What was the plan? And did you have trouble finding, you know, financial assistance to implement the plan?
Well, we didn't have much trouble. One, because the evidence was there that there's drought, crop failure, total crop failure. And if nothing is done, then people definitely will start losing lives. People will die. So planning was quite hectic. The whole issue was in the implementation, because here is the government. You're working with the WFP. And from WFP, is working with the international NGOs. And all these players are on the ground, and you're coordinating them. It was an experience, because this was the first time we ever had such kind of magnitude, but we managed.
So 6.7 million Malawians, or 40% of the population, were really hit by the big food insecurity situation. This is unprecedented. For WFP, we have not seen scale of food insecurity this big, and we've been here for some time.
Koko Ushiyama is the World Food Programme's representative in Malawi. She says the humanitarian response had to be big, and it had to be fast.
So how much money was required to secure enough food for all those people, millions of people at risk? And I understand that you engaged with the IMF at some point. Is that unusual?
So overall, the food insecurity response plan that the government launched last year had a requirement of $395 million. And that had the requirements not just of the food security cluster, but nutrition, education, protection, other clusters. Although having said that, the biggest requirement was for the food response, and that was $307 million. What we know is that this was a major response. It's been the largest, longest humanitarian response that we've seen in Malawi's history. What we also knew was that we needed an unusual form of engagement with partners. At that point, we were having about some 10 donors who supported us in 2015. For this 2016-17 response we just finalized, we had close to 30 donors. So back early since June last year, we knew we had to have a different engagement strategy to broaden the donor base and the support. So to get from 10 donors to some 30 donors was a major accomplishment, and IMF is a key partner.
And so what happened, given the history? I mean, what is it that made the donor community feel confident enough to jump in and start contributing to this the food crisis?
Well, given the magnitude of the human suffering, the potential human suffering, no one, donor or even the fund, could sit idly by. And the fund was the first to approve an augmentation to the amount of resources that we provide to Malawi. And that had a catalytic effect of bringing other donors on board in providing the humanitarian relief that the country needed. Two things happen. The World Food Program of the UN is an established, well-oiled body that knows how to respond to these crises. The resources were channeled through the World Food Program, so that gave a high degree of comfort to stakeholders, including the fund, that the resources would go towards their intended beneficiaries. And I think that was basically the mechanism that put everyone at ease. And also, we would allow for a widening of how much financing could be provided domestically as a result of the additional resources that the IMF would have disbursed. But tied to that, we had the condition of that these additional resources would be used specifically for the procurement of maize to help the most vulnerable segments of the population.
And so there were some restrictions on funds, and particularly the funds that came from the IMF. As far as I can understand, there were, stipulations like twinning. Can you explain how that works, and how do you feel generally about conditionalities like that on donor money?
First of all, for WFP, really, we have to acknowledge that generosity of the 30 donors that came forward, and government played a key role in this response. In fact, when we look at the pie chart in terms of overall support, it's government which is top two donor to this response because of the engagement they had with IMF, World Bank, and African Development Bank. As WFP, but also as humanitarians, we do not like conditionalities. I think as part of good humanitarian donorship, there's also emphasis on less conditionality, less earmarking. Let the humanitarian community do our job without that kind of conditionality. So while acknowledging, appreciating the generosity, I must say there were key challenges, not just IMF, but almost all in terms of conditionalities and earmarking. The other challenge we also had was delays. Typically, from the time that we start discussing a possible donation, including a pledge, it will take 3 to 4 months for the donation to materialize. We also knew that last year's response was extraordinary in a sense that we had to scale up so quickly. By November, December, we were close to 6 million people plus. We knew also that come October, November, the rain season starts, which progressively make our access challenges much more severe. The roads get cut off, the transporters, some of them outright refuse to go to some places because their trucks will get stuck. So conditionality, earmarking, very tough. Twinning for us is a necessity. We cannot just get food. We need associated cost to deliver the food. We need associated cost to engage our partners to monitor, to make sure the food goes to the right people at the right time. So those are the associated costs that we need, which we call twinning. When a donor says, no, I can only give you the money for food, we may potentially end up with a very disgraceful situation where we have the food ready, but we are unable to make sure that the whole chain is done properly. Again, timeliness for us is absolutely critical.
There are a lot of different layers to an effective humanitarian response, but the government's food insecurity response plan put protecting the most vulnerable segments of the population at the very top of the list. And many of those most vulnerable are in the country's rural classrooms.
I want to buy the soap, but I don't have enough money. Are we going to class?
Yes.
Okay, what is another part there? Gloria.
I want to buy the soap.
That is the first part.
Pingene Zigwetsa is a teacher here at the Dimera School in central Malawi. Yeah.
So the children get meals here when they come to school? They get food as well?
Yes, they get food. The food is also ready there right now. They always enjoy the food.
And do you think that giving them food at school, it makes them come to school?
Yes, they always come to school because of this food. Yeah, they are in numbers every day.
So how many children are in the school, from standard 1 through 8?
There are about 1,500 plus.
1,500?
Plus, yes. Yeah, some of them are coming from far.
Like how far?
Some of them almost 5 kilometers, yeah.
And I see they come by bicycle as well sometimes.
Yes, some of them are coming from on bicycles. Yeah, some of them are walking to be here, yeah.
And the school's storekeeper, Trabo Sitka, says staying in school can mean a lot for the families during a food crisis.
In addition to that, we also have a take-home ration. That's the maize that given to the girls and often boys who have at least attended 90% of school days, 18 days per month. So give them 10 kgs each. That's take-home ration.
So if they come to school often, they get more food?
Yeah, when they come to school, they get more food.
And while the World Food Program worked hard to make sure schools got the food they needed, UNICEF was charged with the social protections portion of the humanitarian response.
UNICEF Malawi has a unique position in working with the government to identify children before they get to the stages of severe malnutrition. And to do that, one of the unique things we did this year was we did mass screening. And this basically is going door to door to try and identify those children at risk and to catch them before they reach chronic malnutrition. And over the last year, we identified and we screened about 90% of the children. And we are looking at the micronutrients, what kind of food these children are actually getting to. My name is Roisin De Burka, and I am the deputy representative with UNICEF Malawi. This is predominantly a country which relies on maize, and maize alone for young children is not adequate enough. So we work with the communities to try and train them about what is food nutrition for children. But in the cases of a drought where the family do not have an income or they may have only limited access to food, they have to make choices that may not benefit the children. So in this context, through the mass screening, we are able to identify these vulnerable children and to provide the family with that food that will help the child grow during that period, and not just wait for those children to present themselves at centres when they are already chronically malnourished.
And so what have we learned, if anything, from previous food crises? Do you feel that this one was better managed because of the experience of others?
I think in all emergencies, we always learn new lessons. And in the context of Malawi, the lessons we learned from the flooding, some of them were applied to the drought response. But again, the drought response is a very specific response in terms of food aid. In terms of supporting the populations, UNICEF continues to support cash transfers to help support communities, to help the communities make decisions about what their needs are. We have carried out many studies to show that these populations are using this cash both for food but also for healthcare and education for their children.
Do you find that this is a more effective means of making sure that the population is fed even during a food crisis?
I think it's a combination of many things that you have to support the population. Food alone is not will help the population, but we also need to look at access to medical care to ensure that there's essential drugs in the clinics that can support the families in need. We have found with many malnourished children that they also have diseases that they need such things as antibiotics to support them. Social cash transfers are very successful, but they cannot be successful on their own. They need to be complemented by others, strengthening of other social services. And that may also include the provision of food.
And so are you worried next year that you'll also not have enough food?
We're really worried because this year also our crop was affected by the... We had too much rains at the end of the harvest and most of it got rotten.
So what are you going to do if you don't have enough food next year?
If we don't get assistance from organizations like WFP next year, we'd have to find other ways of making money, which means going further from here to find work and make find something to put on the table for our children.
So with no end in sight to these food shortages and the country's extremely limited resources, Malawi can't be expected to go it alone. The World Bank country manager for Malawi, Laura Cullenberg, says while the government is working hard to regain the trust of donors, its track record is making it difficult.
How would you describe the relationship between the government of Malawi and the international donor community, you know, including the bank, in recent years?
Well, first of all, Malawi is a highly aid-dependent country, and it's really an outlier in that respect. 40% of the budget is coming from donors. So that creates a certain type of relationship with advantages and disadvantages. There's a very close partnership with this country, and one of the world's poorest countries, a lot of engagement, and because the development agenda is so vast and so important, there's engagement across all of the sectors. So when a crisis comes, and there are many, the donor community has tended to step up. The group has also tended to coalesce around reform opportunities, but it's cyclical. So there's been, in the past several administrations, I will say, there has been enthusiasm in a sense of an exciting reform agenda, and then a governance failure, usually around public financial management and corruption, not of a small nature, of a large nature, which then makes it difficult for donors to provide budget support in particular, also makes it difficult to justify their programs given the competition for resources. And this has just intensified over the years as the competition for resources has changed, as the international scene has changed, the refugee crisis in Europe and other places is commanding attention. So in the case of Malawi, I think we can see this roller coaster where you have real highs and real lows. You have a very exciting, promising reform agenda, and then the Cashgate crisis, at which time everyone withdrew budget support. It's that volatility is very difficult for a government to deal with if you're that aid dependent.
So, Minister Gondwe, do you think that what's happened recently in this food crisis will sort of, ease relations?
No. They insisted on a number of public finance management reforms, which were put forward with the help of the IMF. We are implementing those. But I think there has been a general policy in any case that donors, particularly bilateral donors, will now no longer provide budgetary support to any country in the world. So regardless of some successes of our reforms, donors have not come back with budgetary support except for the World Bank, multilateral organizations like the World Bank, the African Development Bank, and the EU. To a large extent, we are also relying on the IMF support as far as the augmentation of foreign reserves is concerned. But this year, we think that we will be able to raise enough domestic resources to cover our recurrent expenditures. I am saying recurrent expenditures. I am saying not including development expenditure. But the day-to-day operations of the government now can be funded from our own domestic resources.
At one point during the crisis, inflation rose to a very high level. Why has Malawi struggled so much with inflation in recent years?
In May 2012, this country agreed with the IMF to undertake a deep depreciation of the currency. And it was also agreed that the government should pursue a floating exchange rate that is responsive to the market developments. And unfortunately, the cash gate followed that decision, which meant that the expenditures were much higher than available resources. And to make up for that deficiency, we borrowed a lot domestically, which meant that it was not possible for us to reduce inflation, which was being fueled by the domestic borrowing. For some 4 years now, therefore, the reduction in inflation has been elusive. We've not been able to do it up to this year. From June 2016 up to now, we have had a deceleration of inflation from 27% was the peak, and it went down to 14.6%. We are hoping that we could reach single digits in the course of this year or early next year. Yeah.
And so, I mean, there's obviously an issue when there's a food crisis where when supply is limited and prices are rising. How do you prevent private sector from holding on to stocks and letting prices rise before they start selling their maize?
Well, it's a policy issue. The food requirements in a time of crisis, we divide the country into two. Those who are least able to feed themselves with lack of money, and those who can. We provide resources for those who are not able to feed themselves free of charge. And as I said, we provide the other segment of the population by buying food and reselling to them. And unfortunately, during the crisis, the private sector brought in a lot more maize than they could sell. And so as of now, the question is whether that excess food can be exported or kept. This is a big issue.
Did you know how much the private sector, how much maize the private sector was sitting on?
I think generally what we're seeing as lessons learned, and they say hindsight is vision 2020. So we learn a lot of things. But what we do know is that overall, every key stakeholder could have done better information sharing to understand who's sitting on stocks, who's importing food. I think generally, private sector potentially may have underestimated two factors. One, that humanitarian response would be so successful and well-funded, but also the price setting that the government had done. because usually December, January, February is when the prices are usually high. 2016, we had seen abnormally high food prices. I think some of the private sector partners are looking at that as well, expecting that this year's December, January, February prices will be as high or possibly even higher than last year, which was not the case.
So once we started to purchase maize, the prices started falling? Do I understand that correctly?
I think that the fact that we imported for the first time at this scale was one component, but I say only one component. The other component was in October when the government set that price of price stabilization at 250 kwacha. The other component, which we really, again, in hindsight, and now we're taking steps to improve the monitoring, is the cross-border trade, informal trade that was coming in from the neighboring countries. So it's hard to pinpoint what exactly, how much had made a key difference. But I do think humanitarian response was needed and has made the positive impact. But there were other factors at play in terms of prices.
So it's a fine balancing act when managing a humanitarian crisis, providing resources, in this case maize, free of charge to those who need it most, while not disrupting market forces of supply and demand. But the scale of this food crisis was exceptional, with lots of moving parts. IMF resident representative in Malawi, Jack Ree, says it happened so fast, the government lacked the capacity to handle certain aspects of the response.
Collectively, both the development partners and the government decided that we, rather than using the existing administrative system within the Malawi government, we would use World Food Program to be a practical vehicle to deliver food to those people who are in need. The rationale is that, okay, the food crisis basically was coming in abruptly, and we didn't really have a time to prepare to build up the capacities. So there was a capacity gap from the government, and we needed to somehow implement a huge logistical operation.
So I'm just going to interrupt here. When you say capacity gap, do you mean that the government was faced with, bringing in money that they weren't necessarily prepared to distribute?
So even if we were able to give the money to the government, that there is an issue of procurement. And for example, a lot of the maize used for the humanitarian response were brought from overseas, such as Mexico and so on. Government didn't have any experience of bringing in what we call an overseas maize. So that's one feature of the capacity issue. But also, there's a need for lots of logistics involved here, transportation, storage, but also timing all these things in a coherent manner. So that kind of expertise is not built very easily within the government. So we basically use the external expertise of the World Food Program and two other NGOs.
Lake Malawi stretches more than 350 miles, almost three-quarters the length of the country, and straddles the borders of Malawi, Mozambique, and Tanzania. And while the lake could eventually serve as a water source for irrigation farming, the investment required to make that happen is daunting. Meanwhile, water levels are dropping, and communities around the lake have not been spared the effects of the drought. Do you think that we're getting less rain now because of the changing weather?
Yes, now we are getting less rain because of weather, climate. Yeah.
Is that causing problems?
Yes.
Well, what kind of problem?
When we don't have much maize, it's a big problem because our good food we like to eat in Sima, made out of corn. So when we don't have a lot of corn, nothing good. Yeah.
And so what happens when people get hungry?
What happens when people have the hungry? Some organizations, they do bring some food, even government sometime, they do try to give people means. Yeah.
And did that work out this time?
Yes, this time it's good because people, we got new mains. But the other places, because of calamities, they don't have much food. Yeah.
So what's your name?
Watson, my name.
Watson.
Yeah, I'm from Karabe, but I've grown up here.
With climate change, do you think that food insecurity is going to be more and more of an issue in yes. terms of managing your budget?
Yes. The trouble is that we are not really equipped for when there will be deficiencies of rain and when there will be adequate rains. And so that's a problem. In the long term, we are now, starting from this year, investing a lot of resources on the development of irrigation agriculture. A lot of money we are sinking on that. So that in future, it may not matter whether or not rains come. But in the medium term, it will be a problem. We will still have a problem of climate change, and we will take it as it comes.
This situation has been getting worse over time in Malawi, rapidly growing population, deforestation, change in climatic conditions, and each time it gets worse till it's almost half the population at risk. And despite the fact that we may have an economic and financial arrangement, at the end of the day, we are human too, so we have to be helping our member of the institution in a time of crisis. So I'm happy that it worked out. But looking ahead, Malawi needs to move away from rain-fed agriculture because I think given the changes in climate, it's likely that the situation will get worse. And also resources are getting scarcer. And these donors who might have been able to help this time may not be in a position down the road to respond as quickly. So Malawi needs to use more irrigation, increase productivity in the agricultural sector because it accounts for 30% of the income of the country. And most of the population is involved in agriculture. So clearly what may have worked in the past in terms of a simple rain-fed subsistence farming certainly will not help given the risks going forward.
Rhoda Lawari grows maize on their small farm in Mwambe village in Salima district. She says they're aware of the risks of depending on the rains, but has little choice in the matter. So how was the harvest this year? How was your harvest?
She was able to harvest maize that was three tons.
And so how does that compare to other years?
In a good year, she harvests about 5 to 6 tons, but this year she's gone down.
By almost half?
Yes.
Yeah. And so, you know, with less and less rains, every year you seem to get less rain. Are you going to change the way that you farm? And like, can you try and use groundwater for farming rather than rain?
We've tried to explore irrigation farming, but then usually the starting point is where we don't have the tools to start the irrigation farming. Hmm.
So you could use some help with that.
Yes, we'd really need that help.
Okay, thank you very much. I appreciate that. Mm-hmm. So with climate change, it looks like things are not going to get any easier. And given how important the agriculture industry is in the country, is there anything that the international community and the World Bank should be doing or that are doing in terms of trying to help the country move away from rain-fed agriculture?
I'm Richard Record. I'm senior country economist with the World Bank here in Malawi. I mean, if Malawi really is going to become more climate resilient, which is what it absolutely needs to, I think we all recognize it requires both movements on the policy side and on the investment side. And one without the other is not going to achieve the sort of results that the country really needs. So, and this is where something in the World Bank, you know, we're committed to helping Malawi, both with the, you know, the resource transfers to put these kind of investments in place and helping make those policy changes, you know, that will, you know, unlock the potential of agricultural commercialization, diversification, and a more sort of integrated Malawi.
And so what is the difference between, you know, the approach of the World Bank and the approach of the IMF in terms of when they're trying to help a country out of a crisis, like a food crisis?
I mean, we're sister institutions, plus I think there's also a recognition of the challenges that Malawi faces. You know, we need to work really closely together. I think that, you know, the way it's worked is the fund has sort of had a focus on the short-term macroeconomic stabilization agenda with the ECF program, which has been ongoing over the last few years. Our sort of comparative advantage is trying to address some of the longer-term structural issues. So, you know, addressing some of these policy constraints that have made Malawi vulnerable to climate change, and some of the policy barriers that have prevented perhaps a takeoff in terms of higher growth and more effective poverty reduction that the country needs.
I think there's a very strong engagement between ourselves as sister institutions on all of these issues, both on Cashgate and around the humanitarian crisis, to make sure that we are supporting each other. And I think the understanding of the problems is very similar. The tools and instruments we use to support the government are obviously very distinctive. But there was very close collaboration and very constructive.
And the impact of that close collaboration between the government of Malawi and international institutions can be seen on the faces of these children at Damera School as they line up for a scoop of the maize porridge that will sustain them for another day. The success of this joint humanitarian effort saved millions of people from going hungry this time around. But as the world tries to adapt to increasingly unpredictable weather patterns, joining forces will be key to helping Malawi better prepare for what's to come. You can read the IMF's latest review of Malawi's economy at imf.org. And if you like this podcast, you can subscribe on iTunes or on your favorite podcast app. Just search for IMF Podcasts.